This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and my major client, I'm a little cold, so I'm a little shivering. My major client is actually closed all next week, and they're closed tomorrow, which means I am officially on Christmas vacation right now. Woohoo! So unless something goes wrong with Cycle tonight, which hopefully that won't happen, after tonight, I am on vacation until the 2nd of January. Fun, 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 fun. Also, I achieved a major milestone in my life this last week. I have something I can scratch off my bucket list now. A couple of years ago, I was driving on the south side of town, and I saw one of the little Google Street View cars. And I went, oh, but he was going the other direction, and the car had turned into a subdivision. By the time I got down, turned around, and back into the subdivision, I had lost track of the car. But I drove around in the subdivision for a while because I wanted to get on Google Maps. Could never find the car. So I thought, well, there you go. And I had kind of forgotten about that. Well, months ago, like 6 months ago now, I think. I had pulled out onto the street just like I did just now from my major client, and I saw a Google Street View car go by. I went, oh, so I pulled in kind of behind it. I was just kind of tracking along behind it, but I had to pick up some pharmacy stuff for my parents and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I wasn't really thinking about the fact, oh, he might be recording now. Fun stuff. Somebody, one of the programmers, for some reason, was looking at the Street View stuff there right by headquarters, my major client, and discovered that, in fact, that car was recording as it went by. So my little car and me are actually on Google Street View now. I don't know how long we'll be there, probably until the next update, but right now, on December the 22nd at 4:47 in the evening, in the early evening, I am on Google Street View. So if you go to 491 East Division. Is it East Division? Wait. Is it East or West Division? It's 491. 491 West Division? I thought I put in 491 East Division. Anyways, if you go... Oh, rats. Hang on. Ah! This is death. I had this figured out. 491 East Division. If you put in 491 East Division Street, Springfield, Missouri. How can that be East Division? Anyways, comes up. 491 East Division Street. It should come up where you're looking down West Division. And then if you rotate, there should be a church that's made out of brick. That's the old building that I work in. But there will also be a car that's getting ready to pull out onto the street. It's a raspberry-colored car. It's a Chevy Prism. That's my car. And if you zoom in, that's my blurry face. You really can't tell it's me. Because they blur out the faces. But that's me. And in fact, you can go down the street and you can see me kind of following the car a little bit. And then I pull off into the pharmacist, which I went to go get my dad or my mom's prescription. I forget which it was. I should, so yay, something that's scratched off my bucket list. I should also say that I'm a little loopy right now, because I do this thing where twice a year I do a 60 to 80 hour fast. So a 2 to 3 day fast, a little over 2 days, a little over 3 days in there somewhere. Because supposedly there's been some research that says that if you do a 2.5 to 3 day fast, your immune system will actually kind of reset, because your body is scrambling for resources, and so it will actually go through and recycle a bunch of stuff, and da-da-da-da-da. So I normally do that around January 1st, and then I also do it around July 1st, and I always fast on Wednesdays anyways. I stop eating on Tuesday night, start eating again on Thursday morning. So I do that anyway, so since I'm started, then I just extend a couple more days. And so I'm in the middle of that right now. But I'm over the hump, because I'm, you know, this is the end of 40, well, at 10 o'clock-ish tonight, it'll be 48 hours. Because I quit eating Tuesday night. So I have been taking some emergency, because I'm trying to stay ahead of a little cold that feels like it's trying to latch on to me. Have been taking some zinc tablets and stuff, but, you know, that's it. And I've been having one cup of coffee a day, but that's like 5 calories, 10 calories, so there's nothing in it, because it's just, I'm just doing it black. Anyway, said all that to say... I'm going into 48 hours not having eaten. So if I'm a little loopy, that's why. I'm still working on all the files for the production version. I got my cover redone. Although I have a little bit of tweaking to do on that. And now I'm starting to build the internal files. And I expect to get the book internal file built tonight. Tomorrow, hopefully we'll have time to work on the Kindle version and the EPUB version. Once I have those all put together, then I'm going to start uploading stuff. And so hopefully by Sunday, by Christmas, hopefully I will have all the files uploaded for Windfall 5, which is Windfall, the Reddening Sky. So yay. And then next week when I'm on vacation, we're going to be doing some running around, but I'll probably next week go ahead and get started with my read-through of what I have done already on Windfall Wheat and Tares, so I can get moving on that. So all is well. All is moving forward on that. It's good. Looking forward to this week, because obviously Sunday is Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone. And the kids are actually in town this time, so they'll be down on Sunday, and our new music minister at our church, they're going to be down, and then my mom and dad and Lynette's mom and dad. So we're going to have a, you know, fairly good houseful and play games. And the other reason I decided to go ahead and do this 3-day fast now is because I thought, you know, if I do my 3-day fast now, I could just eat anything I want on Christmas. I could just have fun, which there's an advantage to doing the 3-day fast ahead of the binge. There's also an advantage to doing the 3-day fast after the binge, but I just decided, let's just go ahead and get this done. Then it's done. This week, I said last week I had something cool this week having to do with music. I came across this TED Talk called The Playful Wonderland Behind Great Adventures. And it wasn't really much of a TED Talk so much as it was just a presentation by Stephen Johnson. And it, apparently he's done some others. I didn't notice until I was looking this up. I was like, well, there's another one. And so it was really just kind of a slideshow and, you know, talking about different things and showing different things. But it was very interesting, at least from my perspective, because I've always thought that music was amazing. I mean, it was just, most people do resonate with music, but I mean, I've always really deeply resonated with music. And then I've always felt like there, you know, it's magic. It's just magic. And as I was listening to this TED Talk, I was thinking, yeah, you know, there's something going on here. And he didn't really bring this out, but his examples brought it out. So I'll just kind of go through what he had to say about it, because it's very good too. But then I have some additional thoughts on this. Anyway, so the name of the TED Talk was The Playful Wonderland Behind Great Inventions by Stephen Johnson. So he was pointing out that roughly 43,000 years ago, roughly, a young cave bear died in the rolling hills of the northwest border of modern-day Slovenia. So 1,000 years later, a mammoth died in southern Germany. Said a few centuries after that, a griffin vulture also died in the same vicinity. He said, we know almost nothing about how these animals met their death, but these different creatures dispersed across time and space did share one remarkable fate. After their deaths, a bone from each of their skeletons was crafted by human hands into a flute. He said, think about that for a second. Imagine you're a caveman 40,000 years ago. You've mastered fire, you've built simple tools for hunting, you've learned how to craft garments from animal skins to keep yourself warm in the winter. What do you choose to do next? And note that we don't actually know that it was next, because we don't actually know when they figured out to make flutes. So someplace in all that discovery and learning, they made flutes. He said, the author of this TED Talk said, it seems preposterous that you would invent the flute, a tool that created useless vibrations in air molecules. Woo, little loopy. But that is exactly what our ancestors did. So what he's saying is that in the midst for this great struggle to survive, this idea of music was there. And the idea was music was there enough that it had as much prominence as gathering food, conquering the village next door, etc. He goes on to say, and here's the really strange thing. Many of those playful but seemingly frivolous inventions ended up sparking momentous transformations in science, in politics, and society. So, my ears kind of perked up when he was talking about music. I thought, well, that's interesting. But then he went on to start talking about some of these innovations and where they actually started. And I hadn't heard this before, but I took very close note over the fact that there's music involved in these. So anyways, he said, for instance, programmable computers, which are arguably the most important invention of modern time. Programmable computers. He said, you listen to the standard stories and it's, oh yeah, it came from military technology, you know, because the computers were designed specifically to crack wartime codes, calculate rocket trajectories. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. He said, but in fact, he said, the origins of the modern computer are more playful. Even music. Oh, sorry, got onto the rumble strip. Then you imagine. He said, this idea of pushing air through a tube and making music with it like the flute, okay, that was modified and became the first organ more than 2,000 years ago, pipe organs. Said somebody had the brilliant idea of pressing levers with our fingers, and they invented the first musical keyboard. Said now, keyboards evolved from organs to clavichords to the piano until the mid-19th century. Okay, the idea of a keyboard to create music. Said finally, inventors in the mid-19th century hit on the idea of using a keyboard not to trigger sounds but letters. Said, in fact, the very first typewriter was originally called the writing harpsichord. He said, but you go on, and he said that flutes and music led to even more powerful breakthroughs. He said in the Islamic Renaissance, three brothers in Baghdad designed a device that was an automated organ. They called it the instrument that plays itself. The instrument was basically a giant music box, which note, music boxes as well are a predecessor to this. The organ could be trained to play various songs by using instructions encoded by placing pins on a rotating cylinder. And if you wanted the machine to play a different song, you just swapped out the cylinder. Said it was the first of its kind. It was programmable. And he said the whole idea of hardware and software becomes thinkable for the first time with this invention. So that's a powerful concept that didn't come to us as an instrument of war or contact or conquest or necessity at all. It came with the strange delight of watching a machine play music. He said, in fact, the idea of a programmable machine was exclusively kept alive by music for about 700 years. And he said, in the 1700s, music-making machines became the playthings of the Parisian elite. Showmen used the same coded cylinders to control the physical movements of what were called automata, an early kind of robot. One of the most famous of these robots, you guessed it, was an automated flute player by a brilliant French inventor named Jacques de something or other. Vaucasson, something, I don't know. Anyways, while this inventor was designing his automated flute player, he had a different idea. He thought, well, instead of, if you could program a machine to make pleasing sounds, why not program it to weave delightful patterns of cloth out of colors? I'm getting my mail, one moment. And so that actually led to him designing the first programmable loom. And in fact, instead of using metal cylinders, he decided he would use paper punched cards because they were more flexible. So here you have the beginnings of, you know, the paper cards, the card punch machines. And he said that card punch card system inspired Victorian inventor Charles Babbage to create his analytical machine, the first programmable computer ever designed. He said, and punch cards were used by computers as late as in the 1970s. And in fact, at my major client, we have certain data structures that we're still using that are 160 characters long because that's the amount of space there was on two punch cards. So, I mean, this goes back a long, long, long way. He says, as he's concluding this, that yes, military involvement is an important part of the story, but inventing the computer also required other building blocks. Music boxes, toy robot flute players, harpsichord keyboards, colorful patterns woven into fabric, and that's just a small part of the story. So he says, now I think this has implications for how we teach children in school, how we encourage innovation in our workspaces, but thinking about play and delight this way also helps us detect what's coming next. Think about it. If you were sitting there in 1750 trying to figure out the big changes coming to society in the 19th and 20th centuries, automated machines, computers, artificial intelligence, a programmable flute entertaining the Parisian elite would have been as powerful a clue as anything else at the time. It seems like an amusement at best, not useful in any serious way, but it turned out to be the beginning of a tech revolution that would change the world. You'll find the future wherever people are having the most fun. And I think that does apply, and I think one of the easy parallels that you can draw to this is virtual reality. Virtual reality has been primarily used for entertainment, but obviously it's going to have a huge, huge impact in the coming years. Virtual reality is just going to be a huge game changer for society. And it's very difficult to predict all the things that will happen, but obviously since we're all humans and we all have flesh, there will be plenty of ways that virtual reality will be used to get people even more enslaved to their fleshes. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is music. Music. Because music, I think it is no coincidence that music was involved in all these things, because music has this very powerful ability to alter our realities and to make us receptive to other realities. It's an amazing thing that it should affect us on such a profound level as it does. And yet it does. There's magic there in music. And I don't find it surprising at all that cavemen figure out ways to integrate music into their lives, because music connects us to our existence and it connects us to other existences. This is why music is used in advertising. It's the reason music is used in movies. Every time you turn around, somebody is trying to set a mood with music. And honestly, all of that's just a corruption of what I really believe it was originally intended to do, and that is to move us closer to God. Because I think God invented music for us to worship Him and to be connected and to feel more connected to Him, because I think it does something somewhere deep down inside us. It opens doors. It does things. And it's an amazing thing. That's why when I was doing, for the short time, doing music ministry, my goal was to use music for what it was intended for. And that is to help people who might be distracted, who might be discouraged, who might be thinking about all the things, worried and anxious, all those things. Music helps focus. And if you can use the focus of music and then combine it with truths, you can open up people's hearts and you can cause them to see other possibilities. And I just wonder if music doesn't unlock creativity within us as well. That in the process of music, something happens within us that responds. And in that response, we get hooked in more to our spirit, you know, than to our flesh. And then we hear whispers. And there is some interesting dynamic that's happening there with music and creativity and yada, 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 yada. So I don't find it unusual at all that people would pursue all kinds of intriguing ideas that are swirling around music. It's just really fascinating. Okay, I'm a little loopy. I probably wouldn't bring this up here because it's really tangential, but I'm a little loopy, so I'll say it anyways. There are actually two types of musicians in the world. There's an intuitive musician. There's an analytical musician. I found this out when I was doing the music notation program. Intuitive musicians just feel music, and they really believe that music notation is simply instructions to them and suggestions to them about how they should play the music. But music is always sound to the intuitive musician. To the analytical musician, music is constructs. It can be reduced in its major forms to time and tonality and expression and repetition. And this is part of what I kind of unearthed and unpacked when I was working on Finale. But when you look at it from that perspective, music notation is simply the visual representation of music. It is music. It's a visual representation. And what we call music is simply an audio representation. And if you just have constructs that can represent that time and tonality and expression and repetition, that in fact, those constructs can then be music as well. And when you view it from that perspective, you actually end up looking at the loom that is creating these beautiful rugs, beautiful fabrics as music too. Because it's time and it's tonality in terms of colors and it's expression in terms of how heavy the yarn is or how thin, and its repetition in terms of patterns that repeat. There is a way that you can classify that as music. And I think there's something in our minds that respond to those constructs on an instinctive basis. And while it's simple for us to feel music and how it moves us, we may in fact be being moved by other things that we don't necessarily interpret as music, but could be classified as music if we broadened our definition. If as we're outside and the trees are there and they're growing over time and there is an expression of the trees and that all of them are slightly different, but there's also repetition because there's certain types of trees that branch and flower. And there is something that happens in us when we get outside. A couple of years ago, I was up visiting with a buddy, and he was, you know, kind of stressed. And we got out into a state park, and we were moving through the park. And he said, yeah, he said, I feel different when I'm outside. I feel different when I'm exposed to trees and nature trails and things. I said, then that's absolutely true. I do, too. Get outside as well. But you know, maybe some of what is going on there is, in fact, that part of us that responds to music is also responding to that, because there's a different way that you can classify all those things, and potentially they can be a type of music. I don't know. I don't know what that thing is in us, but I'm firmly convinced that the designer, that God, created that within us, and that it performs some really interesting function in terms of our creativity and our intuition and our emotions. And so it'll be interesting over the coming years as I think more and more about that. But there was just something as I was watching this TED talk, it was like there's something there. There is something there that I just don't have all put together yet, but that role of the appreciation, the expectation, the experience of music and potentially music in all its forms that maybe we don't even recognize. That's an interesting, interesting thing. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy New Year. Next week, we may be going to see Rogue One, and maybe we'll do a joint podcast. If we don't, I do have other things to talk about. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.